This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The 15th annual Peace Service, sponsored by the Kalamazoo Interfaith Coalition for Peace and Justice, is being held on Sunday. This year's keynote speaker is a Western Michigan University student. Mei Yi will deliver a lecture titled A Jewish Voice for Peace and Justice. Mei, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So let's first of all give our audience a little bit of background on you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Waterville, Maine.
Waterville, Maine. Okay. And how did you end up coming to Western Michigan University?
Well, I studied at the Interlochen Arts Academy for my final 2 years of high school. And long story short, that's kind of how I moved south.
And you're a piano major.
I am a piano performance major.
Now, you are of Chinese descent.
Correct.
Tell us the path to Judaism there. Is your family Jewish or did you convert somewhere along the way?
My father is Jewish, though I grew up in a secular home. My grandparents on my father's side were Nazi Holocaust survivors. So that creates a very interesting, I don't know, dynamic, I guess, in terms of my Judaism, because it's hard for a lot of people. People look at me in the streets and they're like, you're not Jewish. You know, I've experienced a lot of discrimination as a result. I've been rejected from entering synagogues. So exploring my Jewish roots has been a really fascinating process for me. I began after I graduated from the Interlochen Arts Academy. I took a gap year after that, spent a lot of time with a distant relative who was passing away, who had fled Nazi Germany as a young child and only in her retirement home was starting to go to Shabbat services. That 2012 to 2013 academic year that I started exploring my roots, and to me, it was meaningful because growing up, as you said, I look Chinese. So that's how I always identified growing up, because that's how, you know, my classmates saw me. And as young children, we respond to how other people look, I think, at first. So then I said, wait, but there's another part of me. I'm not just Chinese. I'm also Jewish. So yes, I did have a conversion, though it's not necessary or required with the Reform or Reconstructionist movements. But for me, because I grew up secular, it's something that I wanted to do. To me, it was, you know, just claiming these roots of mine in an official way.
How rare is it that you meet someone that checks all the boxes that you do, that someone who is Jewish, but also of, say, Chinese descent or you know, Jews of color, I think, is a phrase that I've seen some places.
Yeah. Well, specifically to meet other Chinese Jews, for me, has been pretty rare, especially when the person is not adopted. I find that a lot of times you'll see, you know, an Asian Jew in a synagogue, but they'll be with, you know, stereotypically like white Jewish parents, and the child has been adopted into a Jewish family. I have yet to meet someone who is born of a Jewish parent and an Asian parent. In terms of Jews of color, there are quite a few, actually. I'm applying to rabbinical school, and within the next 2 weeks should be receiving a letter in the mail. And at the school that I've applied to, the majority of the student body are actually Jews of color. I think that there are two black Jews there who are studying to be rabbis. I know that there's another Asian student there, and it's just a really exciting place.
So what would you like to do as a rabbi?
Yeah, so I'm really interested and fascinated and really want to dig deep into some social justice work through a Jewish lens, through a Jewish perspective. And that kind of has influenced my transition from being a senior piano performance major and graduating to turning towards the rabbinate. I've been pretty distraught over the recent election results and current administration. And
you mean here in the United States?
Yeah, okay. Here in the United States. And it's been, you know, it's been hard for me. And I've come to this place where I don't feel like, to me, music isn't going to cut it anymore. I feel like there's more that I can do. Some folks listening may recognize me as the organizer of the February 5th rally that happened in Bronson Park against Islamophobia and for Muslim immigrant and refugee rights. So I just feel like I have a lot to offer as an organizer. I feel like I have a lot of passion in me. I also feel like I'm the type of person that internalizes the pain and the oppression and the suffering and the marginalization that I see takes place in the world. And I really want to have my part in doing what I can to tackle that, especially as someone who has strikes against them under this new administration. I feel like it is my, you know, obligation personally and, you know, for everyone else to step up to the plate and do something and take some action and do some change. So, you know, adding to those strikes within a Jewish community, I think that's going to be really powerful. Because within a Jewish community, I'm not ordinary, you know, just in terms of being a Jew of color, being raised secularly, having my father who's Jewish and not my mother, you know, so having all these strikes against me, A, under this new administration, and then B, under a Jewish framework, I'm really just interested in pushing boundaries, standing up for those people who don't have a community otherwise, because that's something I've experienced a lot in my life as a Jew of color, as a patrilineal Jew, as, you know, all these radical sorts of Jew that I am. It's been hard for me to find community, so I want to create that community for others.
Can you just spell out a little bit about what you mean by strikes against you with the current administration? Because I assume you are not someone who is at risk of being deported. So what specifically are you talking about?
Yeah, you know, being a woman, Planned Parenthood is being cut. Our rights are being cut. Being Jewish, we've seen anti-Semitism rise like crazy lately. So that's a strike against me. I read recently that, you know, hate crime against Asian Americans is going up. There's three strikes against me there. I'm also a victim of sexual assaults a few times. That's not really protected under this new administration. There's really no empathy for those survivors. So I think those are just a handful of what I feel are strikes against me under this new administration.
So can you tell us a little bit about what you mean by the idea of being a Jewish voice for peace and justice?
Yeah. So to begin with, this is kind of a play on words because I'm a member of an organization called Jewish Voice for Peace. And Jewish Voice for Peace is an organization that is really fighting for the rights of Palestinian and really doing a lot of work to end Israel's occupation of Palestine. So I think that's where this title comes from. That's where I come from. In my keynote on Sunday, I'm going to be talking about Palestine and how I, as a Jew, support Palestine and really feel strongly about ending the occupation, about standing up, about fighting for the rights of the Palestinian people.
Do you think that a two-state solution would be the best outcome in the Middle East?
I do. You know, it's sticky territory. It's really complicated, and it's not just a black and white one state or two state answer. There's going to need to be a lot of things that happen once we get there. But the short answer is yes, I do support a two state solution.
Now, you went to Standing Rock to be part of the protest over the Dakota Access Pipeline, correct?
I did.
What was that like? Can you just tell us about what you observed there and how that informed what you want to do?
Yeah, Standing Rock was an experience unlike any other. It was incredibly powerful. The thing that I took away from Standing Rock is solidarity. When I was there, there were over 10,000 people there. I was there over the Thanksgiving break, so there was a lot of influx of people coming to join and support the cause. On Thanksgiving Day, I was standing on the front lines, you know, face to face pretty much with probably 100 or so armed police in riot gear. And I was scared at first. I was like, I've never done this kind of social activism work. You know, I'm just really throwing myself in the deep end, and I was scared. They were threatening, spraying their water cannons at us. And, you know, I marched down to the front lines with a bunch of other people, you know, with goggles on. I had a bicycle helmet if I needed it to stray from rubber bullets. But once I got there and once I was standing on the front lines for maybe 15 minutes or so, I felt very peaceful because that's the energy of the camp. The indigenous people of Standing Rock and at Standing Rock emphasize this is a peaceful and prayerful place. One of the most profound chants that I remember us chanting to the police officers were, we have prayers, you have guns. And that was, you know, kind of that's the message of the camp that I get. We are a peaceful and prayerful place. And it was incredible to experience that solidarity, that peace, that prayer. And I hope to bring that sense of prayer that I learned at Standing Rock to the service on Sunday, as it is an interfaith religious service.
Do you then see some parallels between the Native Americans at Standing Rock, and everywhere else for that matter, and Palestinians?
I do. You know, the Palestinians and the indigenous people, the Native Americans at Standing Rock, are indigenous people fighting for land. I think that's the biggest parallel that we can see. You know, this is sticky territory. Not everyone's going to agree. But the Palestinians were pushed off of their land by Israelis, really by Jews, saying that this is our land. This is our promised land. So many Palestinians are living in settlements. We have many Native Americans in this country living on reservations. To me, that's a pretty clear parallel of the situations there. The brutality on both ends from the, you know, opposing sides' law force is pretty clear. At Standing Rock, you know, I think it was the week before I got there, there was the incident on the bridge where there were, you know, hundreds of people sprayed by tear gas, hit by rubber bullets, and so on. And I know two people who are severely wounded and still are, and I follow their stories on Facebook, and we see the same thing in Palestine. Of course, there are attacks happening both ways in Israel and Palestine, but within the settlements in Palestine, and just within that whole conflict, Israel is, you know, the powerful force there, and the Palestinians are the one being oppressed. And I feel like I saw that at Standing Rock, that the indigenous people are being oppressed. This is their land that we are settlers on. You know, to put it bluntly, I think it's really important that we recognize that and we recognize their rights, because we are living on indigenous land. Yes, of course, this happened hundreds of years ago, but it's pretty fascinating to be there and experience, you know, kind of the root of what's going on.
But I wonder if you also see some differences, because you did just mention there that there are attacks really on both sides in the Middle East, and frequently that we hear of, you know, acts of violence often in Jerusalem and the places around, you know, in Israel and as well as in the West Bank, et cetera. And so I'm wondering if you see some differences in the Middle East compared to here, or maybe just chalk that up to the passage of time.
Sure. Of course, there are differences between the situation in the Middle East and the situation here at Standing Rock, though much of my focus in planning for this speech and doing a little bit of research for it has been focusing on the similarities. So I don't, you know, really feel well qualified to dive into the differences, but I definitely firmly believe that, yes, the situations are not identical. They have parallels and they have similarities, but they are not identical situations.
Does the experience, do you believe the experience of Native Americans in the United States make the case for a two-state solution in the Middle East? I mean, does the parallel run that cleanly? Or again, are there enough differences that maybe the two-state solution makes sense in the Middle East, but it's not necessarily what we would want to do here, or there's reasons that we can do things differently here?
I would say that there's reason to do things differently here. To me, the conflict in America is not as big as it is in the Middle East. At least it's not publicized that way. I don't feel like that there's a constant so-called war between the Native Americans in the United States and the rest of us. Especially if we look at Standing Rock, we're seeing a smaller battle take place. And I think between Israel and Palestine, it's on a much larger scale what's going on. And I think it's therefore that a two-state solution is what needs to happen and what makes sense. It's also much more recent what's happening in the Middle East.
Native Americans do enjoy sovereign nation status in many areas. Do you see that as, again, a very different thing from a two-state solution, or could things work that way in the Middle East, that there's some sovereign areas for Palestine which are sort of carved out?
Huh, wow, that's a tough question. Gosh, I don't know. I really want to see a two-state solution, especially since it's so recent. I feel like we have more room to do work. I mean, we've been established in this country for a pretty long time. Yeah, so I think there are some differences there, and I would really like to see a two-state solution in the Middle East.
Even with a two-state solution, do you think there would still be problems and, you know, messy situations that would still arise, even if we had that ultimate two-state solution in the Middle East?
Yeah, I do, definitely. One of the issues that arises many times when people are talking about the two-state solution is what happens to Jerusalem. You know, do the Palestinians get it? Do the Israelis get it? Do we share it? How do we share it? You know, they're definitely, it's not going to be perfect if there's a two-state solution, but that's why there's a lot of work that needs to happen, that needs to take place in order for a two-state solution, and before a two-state solution happens, in order to ensure that it does work the best way that it can.
You are certainly not the only Jewish person that has criticisms of the Israeli government. You're certainly not the first interviewed on this station, for instance. At the same time, I could imagine some Jewish people recoiling a little bit and saying, you know, first of all, there are regular attacks in Israel carried out by Palestinians. Second of all, I look around this country and I see threats on Jewish community centers, vandalism in Jewish cemeteries. Why are the Israelis the ones right now that get singled out? I can imagine someone making that argument. What would be your response?
So are you asking me why I'm so passionate about Israel and Palestine and not about the hate crimes and anti-Semitism that's occurring on our
grounds? I guess I'm making a theoretical argument that someone who is Jewish and supporter of Israel might make, that, you know, they might feel a little under siege, you know, hearing criticism of Israel while these things are happening in the United States, and also because of the frequent violence that does happen in Israel.
I don't necessarily think that the hate crime that's occurring in our country is, you know, an attack on Israel. And this gets me to the whole thing about what is anti-Semitism and how do you define anti-Semitism. One thing that I would like to emphasize is that, you know, being critical of Israel is not being anti-Semitic. I am still proudly Jewish. I'm going to be a rabbi, for heaven's sake, you know? Like, so I think I really want to be clear about that. Two, being critical of Israel is not being anti-Semitic. I, you know, my school is in Philadelphia. That's where one of the, you know, major cemetery destructions happened recently. And, you know, my colleagues, my classmates at the school were all there cleaning up, helping. And many of my classmates there are members of Jewish Voice for Peace, are critical of the state of Israel. And this was the community that was out there. You know, the rabbi who was first there and physically walked around the graveyard and counted that 539 tombstones were desecrated is on the Rabbinical Council of Jewish Voice for Peace. So yes, even those of us who are critical against Israel are on the front lines here in the United States fighting against the hate crime that is happening and taking place.
In other words, you think that there is a separation between the Israeli government and maybe the day-to-day actions and diversity of thought and opinion amongst the Jewish people.
Yes.
Mei Yi, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Mei Yi is a Western Michigan University student. She will be the keynote speaker for Sunday's 15th Annual Peace Service, which is sponsored by the Kalamazoo Interfaith Coalition for Peace and Justice. You can find links with more information at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.